following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share the latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomena. And our guest today is Mr. Jamie Mauricio, and on August 10th, 2008, Jamie felt inspired to write a novel, which he entitled Beyond 2012. Watch where you're going. That's the title. Beyond 2012, Watch Where You're Going. He felt that the entire story was somehow magically implanted in his mind, and he could not get it out of his head. And Jamie is originally from New Bedford, Massachusetts. He holds a degree in chemical engineering and an MBA. While working as an engineer and business professional, he researches and maintains an interest in metaphysics, consciousness, religion, history, and ufology. Jamie hails from Newport, Rhode Island. On April 26th through the 28th, he will be conducting a paranormal UFO weekend convention in Warwick, Rhode Island, called X-Filers United, in association with Valerie McLaughlin. There will be several guest speakers in attendance, covering the gamut from cryptozoology and hauntings to UFOs and the paranormal in general. So here to tell us all about it is Jamie Mauricio. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here and be on your show. I really appreciate it, having me on.
Thank you for coming. Hopefully I did pronounce your last name correctly?
Yes, you did. Yep, exactly. J.B. Mauricio, and it's all correct, everything you said.
Very good. Everything I say is correct. Don't you know that? I would like to think. So tell us a little bit about your book, Beyond 2012.
Yeah, absolutely. My book, Beyond 2012, Watch Where You're Going, I started writing it in 2008, and it was published in late 2010, early 2011. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really, I'm, as you mentioned, an engineer by trade and finance professional. So very much a logical, you know, math science type guy, and grew up very mainstream, like most people. You know, I was very... grew up lower middle class family in Massachusetts, Catholic, worked, you know, raised to work hard, get a good degree, work hard, get a good job, pay your taxes, go to church on Sunday, and barbecues and ball games on the weekend, and life's tough, and then you die, and that's all.
That's a whole lifespan, yep.
Exactly. Mm. So, you know, that's exactly what I was doing. I had got a great degree. I was working hard, climbing corporate ladder. And, you know, never really thought about writing a book. And then one day I just woke up and this story was in my head. It's a story it's a science fiction story with a component of spirituality that really begs the reader to ask themselves, what's important in my life? Where am I going? What happens after we die? you know, what's this whole thing we call life all about, and what's really going on out in the world. And I woke up one day and it was all there. It wasn't a dream. It was just a story, and I ignored it for several months. About 3 months or so, I had ignored it. And then one day I was sitting, I was living in Southern California at the time, and sitting in a church on Sunday service, and it was a full church full of people, and it was a story of how Jesus walks on water, and he asks, it was the gospel reading, and he asks his disciple to come out on the water with him, Peter, and as his disciple does, he questions it, and he sinks in the water. And as I was listening to this, I thought, maybe I'm being asked to do something I think I can't do, like the disciple walking on the water, and I'm sinking. And so as I thought that, this was a church in California, both of the candles blew out, and there was no windows open in the church. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And so my senses were really heightened, and I was really paying attention now in church, not drifting away. And the priest then commenced and started to say, what's this story all about? And he looked directly at me for some reason. I don't know why, but he, a church full of people looked at me and said, God wants you to write a book about what spirituality means to you, what life means to you. And as he said this, there was a voice behind me, as loud as day, and I'd never heard a voice before, but it said, if you don't write this book, your light will not shine. And I looked around, and the gentleman behind me just shrugged his shoulders. He hadn't said a word. And so it was like something just spoke to me, and I went home that day and just wrote what was in my head. And about a year and a half later or so, it was ready to go and got it published.
Wow. So that was... Yeah, my next question was going to be, what compelled you to write this book? But I think you just answered that, didn't you?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, through writing the book, I went from this mainstream person. It was a life-changing event for me because while I remained mainstream, continued to work my job, I started researching topics such as ufology, such as quantum physics, such as near-death experiences, such as cryptozoology, all these different aspects that really led me to think outside the box. And it's been a life-changing experience, as I said, because the research has led me to places that and see things I never would have thought of, most notably some of the ufology aspect of that I find extremely interesting, and it's led me to places like Mount Adams in Washington State where I had some sightings, and that was really life-changing.
Okay, so I'd like to ask you about your sightings in a minute, but I was going to ask you, did this experience in the book, in writing the book, and just the whole gamut of involving this book, did it change your views on spirituality, religion, or did it strengthen them, or how did it affect them in any way, if at all?
It absolutely has. So I think, first of all, I'll comment by saying I think the ufology and there's a connection between spirituality and ufology, or experiencers. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, you know, as I mentioned, I was kind of in the, I'll call it in the haze. You know, I think it was Winston Churchill once said, "Life is one damn thing after another," and that's how most of us live. And you know, Alan Watts said it best as well. He said, "Well, we're all insecure. We're all living compulsively." And you know, that was kind of how I was living, just kind of go and not, you know, and yeah, I would attend church on Sunday, but not, you know, it was religious, I'd say, but the spirituality component strengthened through this experience because you start realizing, and the research led me to realize, you know, what is reality, why are we here, what's real, what's ego, and then once you know through that, I've come across, you know, readings and information that teaches you how to transcend the ego, how to get to the root of consciousness, and through meditation, things I never really, you know, really did before. And through that aspect, that's what led me to become more, I'd say, more spiritual. I still am religious, but now I see the difference more so, I think, between religion and spirituality, and so that's what I'd say to that.
Yeah, I think that describes my own personal views, not so religious, but spiritual. And people have said, what does that even mean? How can you be not religious but spiritual? How can you be spiritual and not religious? And but it's very hard to explain, don't you think?
Yeah, it can be. I think religion is associated with, you know, there are so many different religions, first of all, and they're associated with all these, I'll call them rules, beliefs. Mm-hmm. But what I found is fundamentally, you know, a lot of them, or most of all, just are about love, right? It's about connecting with Source, connecting with one another as people, and really, you know, fundamentally about love, I think, personally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you tie that in your book, right?
Yeah, so the book itself is really, it's science fiction. The story that came to me is it's the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva that were working to find the Higgs boson goes awry. It creates a black hole, and it's about to breach, and so the public is informed, and there's this mass panic, and there's these four lifelong friends. One is a Buddhist, one's a Catholic, one's a Muslim, and one's an atheist. And they come together and they're discussing their different religions, and or the atheist in this case, the lack of religion, and what they think is going to happen after this black hole breaches and the earth is consumed, and there's all kinds of chaos going on, and the main character, basically, as you're reading the book, he's you think maybe he's in a situation where maybe he's not around anymore, or he's passed on, but he wakes up, he's in this tunnel, and he meets all these different people, walks of life, and on this big tunnel, it's a long, long tunnel, with a light at the end of it, and as he's walking and everyone else is walking, there's images of everyone's lives, and they're really questioning, you know, how they lived their lives, what was important to them, and it's all different walks of life, all different kinds of scenarios. And when the main character gets to the light, he realizes, you know, what God is, this universal conscious connection with all things, with all life, and this ultimate peace. And he wakes up, and the earth hasn't been destroyed, but it's been, you know, there's been a cataclysmic event, you know, and there's only a select population living on the earth. But the people that have lived have become more connected with one another, more telepathic. Mm. We've evolved to a higher state of consciousness. And so, you know, we're rebuilding the earth, but in a different way. And humanity's basically made the leap to the next level, basically, and living in more peace and harmony. So that's the premise of the book.
Okay, so it's a near-death experience coupled with the futuristic Armageddon, right?
Yeah, you could say that. Yep, that's a fair summary.
So what, if anything, of course, the question was going to be, what, if anything, occurred during 2012 to suggest that your novel was prophetic? But it doesn't sound like anything would have been.
No, it was actually that going beyond 2012. So it's actually, at the time, I think there were some folks that feared that maybe something would happen in 2012. So the message was, hey, even if something does, there's we're going to go beyond this. Maybe a transition period that's happening, but we're going beyond that. And how do we go beyond that? And what could it look like? So it's based around the fact that folks thought something could happen, but the fact that no. We're gonna live beyond that, and so as you live through your life, watch where you're going, watch what you're doing, what's important in your life, and really assess that question.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you believe in the what's it called when God's supposed to take everybody up and leave people behind, the rapture.
The rapture, ascension, yeah.
And I always say, well, what if that really happened? You know, because they always. Next month it's going to be the rapture. And now I say, what if the rapture actually happened, and, you know, because there are people that went missing on that day, and you and I have been left behind. And that gets them to thinking, you know?
Absolutely.
Oh, no. So tell us about your UFO experience. You had a sighting?
Yeah, exactly. So as I was doing research for, you know, around the topics that were covered in the book, you know, I think I came across a Project Camelot video. I don't know if you remember Project Camelot.
Yes.
I came across one of their videos back in 2008, and from there I just went down the rabbit hole, really. That's what led me to all these various topics. You know, just all any free time I had, I was consumed with research. Again, in different areas, from ufology to cryptozoology to quantum physics to nature of consciousness to NDEs, so all of those topics. And the ufology was really fascinating to me. And so in 2013, after much research, and I decided, you know, I wanted to head to Mount Adams. which is where 1947 Kenneth Arnold, the pilot, spotted some craft over Adams and coined the term flying saucers, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so the long history of sightings there, and I visited Isetti Ranch. A gentleman by the name of James Gilliland owned some property near the base of Mount Adams, and so right. I visited his particular place, and there was a conference I think that weekend, and it was awesome. And during the first night, I arrived on a Thursday evening, and then the first night, I was there. I started seeing craft, and it was it was in the evening, where I started seeing, I'll say, phenomena in the sky that I could not comprehend. It was not planes. It was not satellites. And I went in very skeptical, even after 5 years of research and seeing, reading a lot of, about the phenomenon, reading a lot of the history, a lot of the documents that had been released through Freedom of Information, and just kind of I had read a lot, but I had not seen anything yet. And really, and so when I saw the first few craft, I had to step away. I sat down and was really just had to gather myself, quite frankly, because it really changed my paradigm. At that point, I had read and done research, but when you actually experience something, it was phenomenal. So I'll fast forward a bit. So over the course of the weekend, I saw many craft. I saw power-ups, and if you're not sure, listeners aren't sure what those are, you can certainly Google Isetti, E-C-E-T-I Ranch, Google it, YouTube, and there's various videos of these craft and power-ups, and they light up the sky. And so I saw that phenomenon multiple times, and then even after 4 days, I was there Sunday evening, and I thought, well, maybe there's some kind of light trick. I'm an engineer. There's something. Maybe it's possible. Maybe everything I've experienced is just. So I'm going to be the last person in this field tonight during this sky watch. And James Gillen, the gentleman who owns the property, went to bed around 10 p.m. that evening. And he said, "I'm heading in, guys." And there was about 70 people or so in the field to begin with. And that night, I wanted to be the last person until around 3 a.m., early Monday morning. Now, I was walking the field, and there was one person who had fallen asleep. And I startled her. She woke up, and she went off, and I was the only one in the field. And I was sitting there all weekend, and mind you, no alcohol involved. I drink water all weekend. No alcohol, no drugs of any kind. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there in this field, and I'm thinking in my head, this has been amazing, whatever these lights are, these craft, thank you. And as I did so, a craft flew one of the lowest I'd seen all weekend right overhead and just did this massive power-up or bright in the sky right above me. And it was this feeling of just peace and just total calmness and peace and harmony. And it just stuck with me. And it was, it was nothing downloaded to me or nothing. I wasn't abducted. I stayed in the field. But it was just this ultimate feeling I'll never forget. And it just flew off and I left the next morning and caught a plane back to Rhode Island, and from there I was definitely hooked and dove even further down.
Okay, describe a power-up to our listeners.
So a power-up is, and again, these are on the Internet, so you can certainly see them probably better than I can explain them, but basically these lights travel over near Mount Adams at different speeds, not satellites. They use satellite tracker. They did not a plane, but some slow, some pretty rapidly. And as they go overhead, oftentimes they'll I think James Gillen calls power-ups, but basically they'll just light up the sky very bright. So they some vary in intensity, but basically it looks like a large star, and then it just gets really bright. Maybe the diameter goes from a star, which is like a small dot in the sky, to a diameter of looking at the sky. Looks like several inches, wide and just totally bright, almost like a blast of like a sunlight blast almost, but it's white light, and it shrinks back down and then just continues moving on. So that's kind of what they look like. And again, there's better videos online that can probably show the picture's worth a thousand words.
But would you say they were intelligently controlled?
I would say that, and the reason that being is. Yes, I would say that some of the maneuvers I saw, and then also what was fascinating was a lot of these folks who are experienced skywatchers, which I wasn't, they bring lasers with them to point out because it's a beautiful sky, so there's many stars, it's beautiful, and so as you're trying to find these craft, it can be hard, but people bring lasers to point them out, And oftentimes, as they're focusing the laser on these craft, not always, but that's when the pop-ups will occur most often, is when there's some, it seems like there's almost interaction with the folks that are on the ground, and that, for me, was fascinating as well.
Yeah, can one go to YouTube to see a video of these?
Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. If you were to go to YouTube and type ESETI, E-C-E-T-I, ESETI Ranch, Mount Adams power-ups, Google those, or YouTube, look for those on YouTube. There's also a documentary. There's two documentaries that James Gillen has done called Contact Has Begun. There's one and two. I believe one is no longer available on YouTube. It's for purchase. But the second one is available free on YouTube. It was most recently. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a video of those power-ups included in those documentaries.
Okay. I have to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. And I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with researcher Jamie Mauricio. And Jamie, you got a conference coming up here pretty soon. And tell us about that in Rhode Island.
Yes, thanks, Dave. Thanks for that question. I appreciate, again, helping spread the word about the conference. It is, the website for the conference, for those listening, is www.xfilers. It's x-filers, F-I-L-E-R-S, United, UNITED.com. So xfilersunited.com. And it is April 26th through the 28th, Friday through Sunday. In Warwick, Rhode Island, which is just about an hour south of Boston. It's very close to the Rhode Island airport, the T.F. Green Providence Airport for Rhode Island. It is basically started coordinated by a woman by the name of Valerie McLaughlin. She is coordinating the event. I found out about it, and being in Rhode Island and having attended many conferences throughout the country here, I reached out to her and asked if I could help, and she accepted my volunteer help. And so since December or so, I've been helping her organize and coordinate this conference. And really, she's a big fan, as am I, in regards to the X-Files show. And so it's all topics related to the show, the TV series X-Files, which covered, again, ufology, it covered cryptozoology, it covered paranormal. So it's really focuses around, you know, all of the genre covered in that TV show. And we've assembled a panel of about 18 presenters, speakers. So it's going to be a symposium style. It's going to be a fun event. Some great folks we have, and they're all listed on the website with their bios. Tim Westberg, who is amazing, he's the MC. He has his own show called Spooky South Coast. We've got, on the paranormal side, we've got Greg and Dana Newkirk with the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal Occult. It's a museum of all supernaturally significant artifacts that they've investigated in different paranormal and occult cases. They recently had a movie come out called Hellier, which is available now. It's a documentary available on Amazon Prime streaming, I believe, as well as YouTube. So they'll be there that weekend. That'll be amazing. We've got some cryptozoology folks, Timothy Renner, Colin Schneider, researchers in that area. So we've got Tom Reed. I don't know for those for listeners who know Tom Reed, but Tom Reed, they made headlines in 2015 where they erected a monument in Western Massachusetts, which is deemed a historically significant and true site where UFO was seen in 1969. That was cited by the governor of Massachusetts, Charlie Baker. It's been featured on television. So that 50-year anniversary is actually coming up this year. But Tom Reed, he was the experiencer who saw the phenomenon. He's going to be speaking at the event. Paul Eno is going to be there. He's been researching paranormal events for over 40 years, and he worked with most notably Ed and Lorraine Warren. So he'll be there. And then also we have a couple of experiencers, abductees, Suzanne Chancellor. We have Mike Stevens, another experiencer, Shane Sirois, who is another experiencer and has done research and worked with so many folks over 30 years to help people in the paranormal, abduction phenomenon. And then on the cryptozoology side, we have several folks, too, I didn't even mention. We have Alexander Petikoff. He's a filmmaker and researcher in regards to cryptids. So he'll be there. And then I also want to highlight, we have the Bridgewater Triangle film being featured Friday night with the filmmaker and director and producer Aaron Cajou. In the Bridgewater Triangle is about a triangular, geographical triangle area in Massachusetts where there's been various sightings, cryptids spotted. And again, this film was done in 2003. It's available on Amazon. So Aaron will be there to talk about the film and his research. So it's going to be an awesome event with all different speakers and presenters, and I'm really excited to be part of it. And Valerie's done a great job to put it on.
It's a three-day convention, right?
That's correct. Yeah, it's a three-day convention, Friday through Sunday. Tickets are available, again, on the website through Eventbrite, but you can go to the website in 3 days. She's made it very affordable. For 3 days only, it's $60 to hear all those speakers, $45 for 2 days if you wish to only attend for 2 days, and then a one-day ticket only for $30. So very affordable, great speakers. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a great event, and it's I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, so let's take, for example, Suzanne Chandler. Do you know her story at all?
I know her a little bit. So Mike Cleland's going to be speaking, and I met Suzanne through Mike Cleland. He's listed also as well, and he's done some research around the connection with owls and UFO sightings. So he'll be speaking there. So I heard him speak at a conference several years back, and she's friends with him, but she lives actually in Rhode Island, and so I reached out to her. And she has her own podcast, so you can learn more about her. But she's basically an experiencer, and she has her own podcast. When she read Whitley Strieber's book Communion in 1987, you know, she realized that, hey, she wasn't alone in her experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So that really kind of awakened her to what was going on, heightened her, you know, psychic awareness and what was going on with her. And so she's been having these experiences, I think, throughout most of her life with other the extraterrestrials. And so she has her own podcast where she talks about these experiences. It's called Random Alien Brain Droppings. And again, the link to her site or any of the other speakers for that matter is also available on the X-Files United website, so you can certainly learn more about her. But she's fascinating, and I think her talk will be
an
eye-opening for the listeners.
Now, let's back up. I heard you say owls. You mentioned the word owls. Did I hear you correctly?
That is correct, yeah. Mike Cleland is a researcher who is he writes about the connection between owls and UFO sightings, and his book is called, one of his books is called The Messengers, and he's a phenomenal speaker, and we'll be talking about the owl and UFO connection, correct?
Okay, so what is the connection between owls and UFO sightings?
Well, Mike's research suggests that oftentimes when an owl is spotted, oftentimes an owl spotting can suggest that can be accompanied by, I'll say, a UFO sighting. So there's a lot of cases where he documents this in his books, and he's had some personal experiences himself in that regard. I think there was a movie made about it. It was Hollywood style, but I think it was called I can't remember the name of the movie now. It was a few years back.
Fifth Kind,
Yes.
Fifth Kind,
I think,
yeah.
So. Yeah. I think that was it. So, I mean, that's loosely based on some of the, you know, some of the stories, but really Mike is more a researcher and talks about some real cases where it's happened, where UFOs and owls have been spotted simultaneously.
Well, experiencers have said that, for example, when they believe they have been abducted, they have seen owls.
Yep.
And with the big eyes, and it's thought that this is a screen memory that ET has given them, so that they won't see the alien with the big eyes. They'll see something that they're more familiar with, which are owls with big eyes. And One person said that they saw a 4-foot owl. It's all yep. right for them to believe in a 4-foot owl more than a 4-foot alien. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and Mike has actually written and talked about that exactly as well. And yeah, and, you know, another theory is maybe there's some kind of shape shifting going on, not only in the form of owls, but other cryptids too that have been spotted, or other creatures, I should say. Owls are not cryptids, obviously. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've actually heard that, and some of the research suggests that maybe they're either an image that they portray to the experiencer, or perhaps it's some kind of shape shifting that occurs.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a shape shifting. I think it would more be implanted image that they're projecting into the subject, into the human, because I often talk about this case where, and I won't give the whole case, but this couple, father and his daughter, were driving along, and all of a sudden they're not where they were a second ago. They're in another road, and lined up along the roadside are all these deer looking at them. Mm-hmm. And they're not running away from the car. There are several deer just lined up on the roadside looking at them with their big deer eyes, you know. And were they really deer, or were they the aliens, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree.
So
I agree. I think one of the topics I mentioned I researched, you know, or have been found fascinating is quantum physics and nature of reality. I've come to believe or think that we're non-physical beings experiencing a physical reality. You know, quantum physics says when you touch a solid object, you look at something, you feel it, you touch it, you think that's a solid object, but fundamentally it's tiny little strings vibrating with a certain frequency, and everything is a frequency. Mm. When you realize that, and science has found that and has said this is so, what is your body? What is all of the physical matter that you think you're experiencing? And then if these beings are, I think they are way advanced, I think they can manipulate, you know, those perceptions and those, manipulate reality in a way that we haven't quite figured out yet. And so I agree with you.
So it could be either one. Could be they're projecting a mental image. It could be they're shape-shifting the material, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's from owls to, you've heard abductees talk about, you know, seeing very attractive, people on a ship that they, they're drawn to, and that kind of phenomenon as well.
Well, there's also the talk about Nordics. Now, have they these little bug-eyed grays shifted into tall, 6-foot, blonde-haired, muscular men and beautiful women? Possibly, but are there really a race that we refer to as Nordics? Are there a race of people like that? You know?
Yeah, it's great. Another great question. You know, I had a chance to meet Travis Walton, interview him, and he's a phenomenal guy, and just amazing to get to spend some time with him. And, you know, it was a fascinating story because when he wakes up, there he's surrounded by three grays, but then he travels into another room on the ship, and he's trying to order himself, and next thing you know, the Nordics show up, but he never did again see the grays, so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so he may have seen a Nordic, right?
Yeah, he may have seen a Nordic, or to your point, perhaps the grays somehow, tricked him to thinking it was a Nordic. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows, right? Who knows? I want to take one more minute just to remind our listeners, you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and that's 89.3 FM on your radio. And once again, WHFR.FM on your computer. So, you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with Jamie Mauricio. Jamie Mauricio is a UFO investigator, and he's, in conjunction with Valerie McLaughlin, they're having a convention in Rhode Island on April 26th through the 28th, and sounds very intriguing. Several guests, yeah. You know. Go ahead.
I was going to say, absolutely. And one thing I failed to mention earlier, Dave, was the event itself, as I mentioned, is in Warwick, Rhode Island, which again is just an hour south of Boston. But it's at a hotel called, again, this is on the website, but called the Crown Plaza. And for those who may be traveling from elsewhere, there is a group rate for the conference. When booking, again, this is all on the website, but when booking your hotel at the Crown Plaza to attend this conference, you would just use the code XFU for X-Filers United, XFU, and the group rate per night is $139 per night for the hotel rooms, which is, it's a great hotel, it's a beautiful hotel, really nice venue that Valerie selected, and so just wanted to mention that as well about the location and the hotel rate.
And what is the URL where they can go again?
The URL for the convention website is x-filers, F-I-L-E-R-S, united, UNITED.com. And that is the link to the convention, to the conference website. And then from there, you can get tickets. You can click to get to the access to the hotel, which will take you to the hotel website. But it's all on the website there, x-filersunited.com. Right.
And you can probably take the list of the speakers and Google them and maybe even go to YouTube and hear a little bit about them, right?
Absolutely, yep. The speakers, as I mentioned, they're all listed on the Program and Events page, and there's an image and a bio for each speaker, and if you click on the image for any of the speakers, it'll take you to their website where you can learn more about them and their work, and also you can certainly Google them, as you mentioned, Dave, and look for their videos on YouTube and learn more about, you know, about them. The other thing, too, I want to mention is Valerie, again, this is a fan of the X-Files show, and so Valerie just contacted me today. There's one more speaker we're about to add, and we're finalizing the actual schedule with time slots for each speaker right now. You can see the days that each speaker is presenting, but the additional speaker we're about to add, and we need to add to the website, just was secured today, is Dean Haglund. He was one of the actors on the X-Files show, also known as the Lone Gunman.
Oh.
He will be there for all 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so we're excited to have him as well and add him to the list.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really exciting. And on the Saturday show, there'll be the film, The Truth Is Out There film, which he's done, and there'll be a Q&A session with Dean following that on the Saturday evening. So we're excited to add that to the program, and again, we'll be putting that on the website probably tonight or tomorrow. But we're excited to announce that as well.
Yeah, I remember reading about Mulder and Scully, and their characters Mulder and Scully in real life. The gal that played Scully was the true believer in UFOs, and Mulder was a skeptic. It was just reversed.
That is funny, yes.
So that's like having a debate, you know, a high school debate. You know, you take the side that you really don't believe in, and the other side does the same.
Exactly.
Always comes out funny, if nothing else. But I think that's a beautiful way to learn each other's views, you know?
Yeah.
Learn each other's views, whether it's political or you know, one's a skeptic, a UFO skeptic, the other's maybe an experiencer, if not a believer. You know?
Exactly. So, put yourself in the other person's shoes for a bit and hear
right.
Thoughts.
That's right. So is this the first time for this convention?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Dave. Yeah, this is another thing exciting about, you know, Valerie. Is, again, when I found out about this by just Googling, you know, UFO conferences in the area, usually I've attended, there's an annual conference in New Hampshire, which is not too far away. There's one in Massachusetts, Leominster, Mass, every year that's gone on for several years now. I attended one in Maine where I met Travis Walton, as I mentioned earlier, Richard Dolan. That was a phenomenal conference. That's gone on, but there's never one in Rhode Island, and so when I saw this pop up, when I Googled it several months back, I thought, wow, this is exciting. You know, we were speaking with Tim Weisberg on his show, Spooky South Coast, and he mentioned he doesn't recall one in the Rhode Island area for quite some time, if ever, so it's a first-of-its-kind event where Valerie and I and the team are hoping that it'll be really successful this year. and that we turn it to an annual event. So, but yes, it is the first line of Rhode Island in my recent memory, and maybe perhaps the first time. So, for this genre, for the paranormal, cryptozoology, and ufology topic.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. You plan on making this an annual event?
We do, yeah, we do. So one of the things, that, you know, Valerie has gone out and, you know, she secured the venue, the hotel, and she's done a ton of legwork behind this whole convention until I came along. She started this, you know, a year and a half ago or so, maybe 2 years now, and so I just joined the scene recently. But, you know, she's focusing, we're trying to focus on ticket sales, so we're going on several shows such as your show here and trying to get the word out. So that's why we really appreciate you having me on tonight to get word out to listeners about this awesome event. But yeah, we're hoping that we can generate enough ticket sales. And again, tickets are only $60 for all 3 days, which is phenomenal, $45 for 2 days, and $30 for 1 day. But based on ticket sales, we're hoping, Valerie's hoping she can, you know, begin funding next year's event and turn this into an annual conference with awesome speakers. And we've got some really great interest. When we started reaching out, you know, we've got some speakers that really wanted to participate, but at this point we have a full load. So we've told folks, hey, hang on, we hope to have you next year, and some really phenomenal guests that I think everyone would be excited to see. So we're hoping we can have a 2020 event as well.
Yeah, I need to point out to our listeners, this is a nonprofit organization. I mean, all the profits go back into, am I correct in saying this?
Yeah, it's not really a nonprofit organization. Valerie is funding it all herself, so but exactly, she's not profiting from this. She's planning to use all of the funds towards next year's conference, but that's great. So it's not a nonprofit organization.
Right.
She is an individual who's basically just coordinating and sponsoring this event.
Right, because we're not supposed to do commercials on WHFR, but as long as a nonprofit organization can certainly talk about their pricing and what have you. But that would be great if that was an annual. There's a lot, you know, are you affiliated with MUFON at all?
You know, I'm not. I've thought about being a researcher for MUFON, and, you know, I think recently you had on Peter Robbins, and I had a chance to meet him and speak with him at some of the conferences I've attended, and he's phenomenal. But, you know, I've thought about it. Just, you know, I have a one-year-old at home now, and as I mentioned, work a normal job during the day, so, mm-hmm. you know, it's just a matter of how to spend my time. But I could see myself at some point, you know, signing up and becoming a MUFON investigator.
Yeah, it's mostly making phone calls to people who have had sightings or claim to have abduction experiences. You really don't have to go out to this site unless there's some physical evidence. Uh-huh. But a couple hours a week, you know, you make a phone call and say, what did you see? Ask them a few questions. You're trained in that. And we always need the interested parties to be investigators, so... what I was originally going with was the fact that MUFON's job is not only to investigate these sightings and to make record of the data, but to get the word out there to the public that these things are happening, these things are being seen, these experiences are being had, and the phenomenon is real.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's, I think, one of the things that about ufology that, you know, one of the topics that I've been most drawn to is because I think that it is real, you know, and I think that, for example, the article in the front page of December 2017 New York Times, you know, if you had told me 5 years ago, like, if there's a major newspaper that's going to have an article like this with a video that's released by the government about a Navy pilot who chased a USO or UFO that took up at speeds that we couldn't explain, that's disclosure. I'd say, oh, yeah, absolutely. And that happened, right? That happened. And, you know, and the pilot, I forget, his name escapes me at the moment, but he's been on CNN, he's been on Fox News. So it's almost out there now. And it's funny, one time I'd love to get your perspective on this because I know you wrote a book kind of on this topic, but it almost feels as though that it's happening, but people are in this haze. And I talked to Richard Dolan about this one time, And I said, I think people just don't care because it's out there now, and I think people just are so focused on, I got to still pay my utility bills, I got to pay my mortgage. Mm-hmm. If it's not impacting my life, if it's not impacting my reality TV shows and my sporting events that I watch, then it doesn't really bother me.
Right.
And he, you know, people kind of agree with me, but Richard thought, well, maybe if there was like a major announcement by our, like a U.S. president that could have a different effect. But, you know, my take was, hey, it's already out there. And you know, one of the things I think it was Richard that said, well, what's fascinating about the case off San Diego that was in the New York Times front page in December of 17 was if that tic-tac symbol that the U.S. Navy pilot chased, if that tic-tac symbol had a Russian flag or a Chinese flag on it, it would be every single news outlet, you know, on every television show. But because it didn't, everyone goes about their business, which I thought was a fascinating comment.
Yeah, it's fascinating because the fact that it didn't have any insignia on it, what does that tell you? It's not of any country of this world, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so for me, you know, it's real, and people are it's ignoring it, or it's just not, it's slowly permeating. And the way, you know, I explain disclosure, my thought is that it's kind of, you know, 500 years ago, there's, you know, when people thought the world was flat, and some people still do, but, you know, there's a man by the name of Columbus who took three ships and sailed across, and I guess the Vikings did it before, but they said, hey, the world's not flat, it's round, but if you own some bakery in the middle of France, and every day you get up at 4 a.m. to make your bread and run your bakery, and people are talking about, well, the world's not flat, it's round, and, you know, you're going to say, well, that doesn't impact me. I said I'd get up every day and make my bread and sell and run my bakery. It probably wasn't until many generations later that baker's family was impacted by the fact that the world isn't flat, it's round, and now we have this global civilization. So I think it's disclosures like that. I think eventually, whether it's 5 years, 100 years, it'll slowly permeate and come out, and we'll realize, wow, we're not alone in this galaxy, in this universe, and we have contact with other beings. So I think that's kind of, that's my analogy.
Yeah, I think that, and in fact, I've often said on the show that the government or the powers that be, I won't say the government, you know, just the powers that be, whatever they are, they're not going to come out and tell us. And I don't think E.T. is going to come out and tell us either. It's just they're little by little, they're going to let the facts be known. And like the tic-tac video and the fact that, yeah, we really are still studying the UFO phenomenon, even though we said back in 69 we weren't studying that anymore.
Right.
little by little, people are going to come to understand that we're, one, not alone in the universe, and two, being visited by civilizations that are more advanced than our own. And so that when the powers that be do say, guess what? We're not alone in the universe. We're being visited by other alien beings. We're going to say, yeah, we knew.
Right.
Well, you know, what's new?
Yeah, I completely agree with that, and you know, it's fascinating too because the caliber. I mean, people like you getting the word out, you know, and the show that you do here is awesome, and
there's so many
other researchers, you know, folks like you know, he's interesting, but Stephen Greer has had some really great witnesses come forward, right? People that have, you know, that have been in charge of the nuclear facility launch facilities for this country have come forward and said, yeah, you know, I'm in charge of this facility, and you know, the government trusted me with taking care of nuclear weapons, and now I'm telling you that these craft flew over our facilities and rendered our nuclear missiles, you know, useless. Folks of that caliber, you know, and very credible witnesses. Paul Hellyer, right, from Canada, and so there's some major players, Edgar Mitchell, so many players have come forward and said this phenomenon is real, and they're doing it publicly, and I think for me that's those are some very interesting data points.
Funny you should mention Peter Hellyer. I had him on the show a while back here, and just today I got an email from him asking me if I wanted him back on the show. I don't know. How old is this guy? 94?
Paul Hellyer, yeah. He's elderly. I'm not sure exact age, though.
He's in his 90s, and he's as sharp as a tack. At least he was when he was on my show. It was a little while ago, but maybe a couple of years ago. But he's just as sharp as a tack, you know?
He really is. I saw a recent YouTube video from him, I think, at a conference in 2018, and he's, you know, he's very sharp.
Yeah, yeah. But, of course, the skeptic likes to say, oh, this guy's 94 years old. Sure, he believes in UFOs, yeah. Except he's been talking about it for years. It's like Edgar Mitchell was on the show. And all of a sudden, you know, well, he's an old man. What does he know? He's been up in space many years ago. But he's been talking about it for so long. What are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of young folks, too. I mean, look at the testimony of John Callahan, right? He was a senior member of FAA, so in charge of, you know, flights and protecting, you know, all the flights out in the air. What he's come forward and the evidence he's, you know, produced, he's, you know, younger. There's so many folks. There's a lot of younger other folks, too, I didn't mention. He just came to mind. But I just think the number of credible witnesses now and the amount of evidence from the Freedom of Information that the government, you know, the documents that have come out that reveal that the government has been researching these topics, it is of importance to them. For me, you know, those are facts that are out there that the public can easily access and learn about if they so choose.
Yeah, so with all these officials coming forward, how much more official does the disclosure have to be, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think it's back to my analogy where the Earth, you know, 500 years ago when people thought the Earth was flat, you know, even after these ships sailed across the ocean and came back and, you know, everyone was talking about it, there's probably a huge population that said, okay, whatever. And that's kind of, I think, where we are right now, right? And, but.
It's just sad. I just, you know, you laugh, but it's sad. Some of these people. And I've looked that up. I've Googled that flat earthers. And they're about, from what I've gathered, about 3,000 people in the world that still believe the world is flat. I don't know what they're going by. What present some facts here, you know?
Yeah.
But, oh, well, we won't make fun of them, okay?
No.
I will laugh in silence.
Yeah.
You know, they're probably laughing at us, you know, silly guys think the world is round. But, okay, so outside of the C-SETI, is it E-SETI?
It's E-SETI, yep.
E-SETI. I say C because SETI starts with a C in this case.
There is a C-SETI as well, actually.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But outside of this, these power-ups you saw, have you had any other occasion to see anything strange like that?
I have, actually, yes. There are two other occasions, one in California and one in Rhode Island, where I saw, they were not power-ups, but they were lights that I could not explain. The one in California, I was sitting on my back patio on a clear night in Southern California where I lived for a couple years, and I just happened to look up, and I had seen this light. It looked like a bright star. But then it shot quickly across the sky and stopped, and then did a 90-degree turn and stopped. And I was by myself, so what I did was I had a sliding glass door and called my wife out and said, hey, can you come out for a minute, because I wanted to make sure I wasn't hallucinating. And I said, hey, take a look at that star up there. And she watched it, and then it did it again, and it did the zigzag. It did crazy motions, very fast, right angle moves. And it stopped, and then she looked at me and said, I'm going back inside, with a white face, and she had seen enough. So that was the first time I had seen something that I really couldn't explain outside of E-SETI. And then the other one was one night in Rhode Island, again, sitting on my back deck here, a clear night in the summer. There were three lights moving across the sky, clearly on a plane. They were triangle shape, and I was watching them, and I thought, oh, that does a weird. Are those three satellites together, or what could that be? And so my father-in-law and my wife were with me at this time, and they saw it as well. And we watched it go across the sky. It was pretty high up, but again, very holding the triangle pattern. And what was fascinating about this was it just stopped. So these three trinolites stopped for maybe 30 seconds to a minute, and then they started to reconfigure and kind of get close to one another and just stop. So that was kind of an odd, those are odd lights in the sky that I couldn't explain, but I wouldn't necessarily per se that was a craft. It was just very strange lights that I could not identify.
You don't think it was one craft with three lights on it, or could it have been?
Very well could have been, but what was weird was it stopped, and then they reconfigured. Some triangle pattern went across the sky for maybe about a minute, and then after about a minute it stopped, just dead in its tracks, stayed a triangle, and then the three lights kind of came together and almost came together, then rotated slightly, and then kind of came together and then disappeared. So that was kind of odd.
Was your wife freaked out about that one?
Yeah. She was a little bit, but by that point, I had explained my SETI experiences. So she, you know, she and I are both mainstream. So as I started diving into the research over the years, she started to accept a lot of and came to appreciate a lot of the research. And so she wasn't freaked out. But I remember my father-in-law kept saying over and over again, "What the hell is that? What the hell is that?" And he just kept repeating that. So I remember that mostly from that night.
Well, Dad, those are aliens. So did you convince them that they were UFOs, or did you try not to, or did you not?
Yeah, I mean, I said it could very well be. You know, I said, again, it wasn't as clear as what I had thought during my trip to East Eddie, but I said, you know, yeah, it very well could be. And he, you know, a lot of my family is aware of, they're obviously aware of my book and the research I've been doing. So it's one of those topics where, and I find a lot of people, too, outside of my family, where you talk about it and they kind of give you that funny look, but then when you're, you know, off in a corner somewhere, someone will approach you and say, "Hey, so I want to ask you about what you know," and they want to know more, but they don't want to do it in front of everyone.
That's
kind of what I find.
That's it. Like I told my sister with our sighting, I said, you tell 10 people separately, not together, but separately, about your sighting, and 4 out of 5 of them are going to have a story for you. And she found out that's true. 4 out of 5 of people say, you know, I saw something one time, or I know somebody who saw something one time. So, yeah, people don't want to, they're afraid of ridicule, so they don't want to say much of anything about it, but people are seeing them. People are seeing them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell us once again where we can go to find out more about your work and this convention. Filers.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave, for that. It is the convention that Valerie McLaughlin and I'm assisting her on coordinating this program and this event. It's a conference over 3 days from April 26th, Friday, through Sunday, April 28th of this year, 2019, in Warwick, Rhode Island at the Crown Plaza Hotel. The website for the event is filersunited.com. And on that website, you can find everything you need, from tickets to the hotel information to the program and all of the speakers and their information as well. It's going to be an awesome event. It's going to be fun. It's going to be, entertaining. It's going to be informative, and I'm really excited about it.
Okay. Jamie Mauricio, thank you so much for joining us. And good luck with that convention.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. So please stay tuned to whfr.fm, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 12 noon, when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Shop with Daddy G here on WHFR, and we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice in the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are, back in the 50s.